Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. I'm sitting in the car, and you may hear the pitter-patter of rain falling on the window. I'm actually in Hannah's parents' driveway while Hannah is filming Bravo's chat room. And this is an intro for an amazing episode with Emma Willman, who is a New York City-based comic. Some of you may know from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. That's probably what she's best known for, but I know her best for the fact that she's an awesome stand-up comedian that I've gotten to know on the circuit. And we bonded deeply over an incident that we talk about on the episode, which I'm not going to tell you about, but it does tie into a bit of conversations we have about giving up booze and recovery and her struggles in that area. So we have a good chat about that. We have a fun chat early on about etymology and conjoined words and the pronunciation of certain words and how embarrassing it is when you get it wrong in front of people who expect you to know. And then we get a little deeper into being a gay comedian, I guess. Although the reason why I say that without confidence is because actually the conversation is largely about confusion about how Emma identifies herself. And I'm going to leave that vague because we get into it quite deeply and it really is fascinating. But it's also, it's quite a serious topic dealt with in a light but thorough way. I think that's a good description, but I was really grateful to Emma for like how fun she was talking about this. And I think you guys are going to like get a kick out of it, but also find it super interesting. She always makes me laugh on and off stage. So I think you'll feel that throughout, which is great. Always. I feel if you feel the chemistry between two people on a podcast, it's, you know, it's nice. It's reassuring. It's entertaining. So there's all that. And then it gets into that conversation leads into some sexual stuff, which is also super interesting because she very much has her own take on what she likes and doesn't like, which was kind of new to me to hear somebody speak so openly about how she perceives herself sexually and what she's into. And again, that's a little vague because I want you to hear the conversation, but it's actually particularly that was a very new conversation for me. And I like it, and it ties in a lot to modern, contemporary conversations about identity, which I think you're going to really enjoy. So this is Emma Willman, and I'll be back. Oh, of course, I got to get better at promo. I did a podcast yesterday, and the two hosts, while I was there, and they were introing me, they were plugging their Patreon and stuff, while I was there. So I know that you got to do that up top. So don't forget, patreon.com/DesBishop, at DesBishop on Instagram. And as always, reviews on iTunes, reviews on Apple Podcasts, screenshots when you listen on Spotify or anywhere else. Spread the word about the pod. Thanks for all your great feedback on the John Bishop episode. And thanks for all the 5 stars and the comments that you guys made. Really, really appreciate it. We'll be back at the end of the episode. But first, enjoy Emma Willman. You're clearly here stating that you have big issues with sugar.
Yeah. If it just has to be like planned out. It's just not, I don't understand people that can just like randomly be like, oh yeah, I'll just have that. I mean, I'll do that sometimes, but I have to be in a good place.
I'm very addicted to sugar. I have a lot of sugar daily. I do, yeah. I have like acai bowls all the time.
I love acai bowls. Tons of
There's
sugar.
There's a lot of sugar.
I know. Tons of sugar.
You're
That's why
denial.
I love them. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, no, I don't drink anymore. I mean, I just beer.
Well, right. I do. I have the sugar, but it's got to be like in my head, like planned out. I'm going to do it. Like, I'll have an acai bowl in the morning. How long did it take you to learn how to say that right?
It was a great question because it was an embarrassing correction. And I remember exactly where I was. I was in Bondi Beach in Sydney.
Oh, wow.
And I actually can't remember how I used to pronounce it, but I was with the Pajama Men. You probably don't know them, but they're like a comedy duo. They're American, but they got big like in the international circuit. And Chanel, I said whatever I said.
Right.
Acai bowl.
Right.
And he was like, acai?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I felt terrible.
I did this sketch with the comedian Esther Steinberg, and I was just like a character in it, and what the sketch was about people who say it wrong. And I didn't realize I was saying it wrong. So I was like sitting and doing background, listening to them fill the sketch. And it was about people, like all the different ways they say it. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like that was one of the ways I think I was saying acai or whatever.
And yeah, how would you know?
How the fuck would we know? Yeah,
there's actually a thing. There's like a squiggle on the A. I didn't know the squiggle. Do me a favor over here.
Yeah. So no one had corrected me before. And then they did it and they were like, it's acai. And I was like, ah.
Yeah, but that came up on my, I had a more embarrassing one once. Way later than should have been the case.
As always is the goddamn case.
Out in West Hampton, I have a neighbor and this kid has been like a genius since he was born. And I know him since he came, since he came out of the womb. Like I've watched this kid grow up.
A real genius?
Like a proper genius kid. And I guess I was like in my early 30s and he was like 11 or 12 and we're talking and I said hyperbole instead of hyperbole. And he was like, you mean hyperbole?
I mean, you're a nerd, kid. You're going to get beat up by me right now. Is he happy?
Oh, no, he's great. He's just moved to Texas and he's killing it now. He's a great kid. But anyway, he corrected me. But it's funny that this is obviously not planned part of our conversation, but it just so happens that this morning on my Patreon, I'd be messing around with people in the comments and we just got into like talking about words that you didn't even realize were like compound words, conjoined words.
Yes.
And I was like, anybody come up with one? Like thinking there's nothing somebody's going to bring up that I haven't thought about. And would you believe, I never really thought about handkerchief.
Oh, I had no fucking idea.
Yeah, it's handkerchief. There you go.
Handkerchief. Oh, yeah, I would have done a dashy thing.
But the thing is, it's a conjoined word. You don't think about it half the time.
I never have written handkerchief in my whole fucking life. Because could you, like, I don't even know. I wouldn't even imagine. I couldn't imagine a
Well, because I've never referred to an item of fabric as a kerchief anywhere.
Right? No.
No. I've never said kerchief.
No.
Today is the first time, and now I've said it about six times.
Right. My uncle has handkerchiefs, but I couldn't even think of a time where I would write out like, they've got a nice handkerchief.
Yeah, but it's handkerchief together, one word. But it's a.
Really? Are they sure? Are you sure about that? You think the person doesn't know?
No, I looked it up.
Oh, you did? Oh,
yeah. Come on, it Googles.
Yeah, of course.
Because, right. you love the etymology.
Right.
You
know? Absolutely.
But anyway, so we'll talk. I mean, you can tell me what you're comfortable talking about.
Oh, I'll talk about anything. We can tell the story about me falling down the stairs if you want.
Well, of course, I was going to talk. About
that. Oh yeah, please. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I feel like
love to talk about it.
Not just from that, but even before that, and then since, mm-hmm. we've always bonded over the fact that you're very open about your struggles with alcohol.
Yes, yes.
And you were openly sober.
I was. And this was 5 years ago, 4 years ago?
I guess. I mean, I remember it well because I remember being very worried about you.
Thank you
at the time.
So much.
Not just about the fall, but just the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you might as well give the play-by-play because I remember weeks later you telling me that you've just broken up with somebody. So like, give me the play-by-play.
Okay.
You were sober. So this is like, this is not a nothing event.
This was also, I think I had just got cast in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend because I went to LA like right after that. So, but had I been cast in it yet? I don't know.
That part I don't know because
I don't think so.
I feel like we never talked about that. I just heard about that over time that you were in that.
Because right after that, I got cast in that and then I went to LA and I swear to God, I was still hungover when I got to LA from that night. So this is what happened. Hadn't been drinking, hadn't been, some people get a support network that helps them not drink. I found that to be the case for me. If I support network, then I you know, like I'm doing that now and fine. But if I don't do any work, generally I'll drink again. So I had done some...
You mean like program type stuff?
I mean program
type
stuff.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah.
So I had done fucking show. Are we allowed to swear?
Of course. Okay. It's just mine.
So I'd done some fucking... Yeah, that'd be funny if you couldn't.
In fact, there's a high percentage of F-bombs on this thing.
Yeah. There was some show out in like the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, and I took a bus to it. And I remember I had was like really like tired anyway. I had no boundaries with setting a schedule. And I just remember being on the bus and doing the show somewhere. It was just like something where it was like, what are you doing? Way out. And I got in and I got to my apartment and I was so tired. And I just remember I was in a relationship and they were living at the apartment, but I didn't like, we were breaking up and I didn't have any space there. And they had friends over and they worked in entertainment. So they were like talking about entertainment. I was like, I got to get out of the apartment. I left. I took my ADD pill late in the day. That's key. Took my ADHD pill probably about 5 p.m. Don't do that if you're going to drink. Bad, 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 bad. So I take the ADHD pill. Wasn't planning on drinking, but I remember it was one of those things where it was like I was hosting at the VU at like 7:30.
That's right.
But I had a spot at the Cellar at like 9.
So afterwards, yeah.
Something where it's cutting it real close. And those two places are very close to each other.
Round the corner.
Round the corner.
And I remember seeing you in the VU and noticing that you were pretty lit up.
Oh, no,
actually, I take it back. I was on that show.
You were?
Yeah, I was on the show that you were hosting. And I remember being like,
oh, no.
She's pretty lit up. But like, you weren't like problematically lit up. But I could tell that you had been drinking.
Drinking, yeah. Yeah. And also, I remember with that, it was like, I got there, and for some reason, I started drinking towards the end of the show, too. But I remember I asked for a vodka soda, and you know, the servers are our buddies. They don't know I've got... Now they do. Now they do, but they didn't at the time.
Now because... You're listed as one of the people to not serve. Right. You're on the blacklist.
Wouldn't that be like just so amazing if they have that? They're just like, don't serve this one. Alcohol, don't serve this one anymore. Like fucking chicken nuggets.
No hot chocolates as well for Emma.
You got
a long list.
Yeah. Emma can't have anything and she can't have air either. Everything is a problem. But they gave me like just like a cup of vodka soda. And I just remember sucking it down and being like, hosting, and then when I realized that I was going to be able to make the spot next door, because I was like, I'm not going to be able to make the spot, blah, blah, blah. And then when I realized, and also, it's like, oh, it's all fine. Like, I was like dramatizing everything.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's all going to work out. I got some time to kill. Have another drink. So I kind of remember that. I just remember sucking down the drink. Then I remember walking next door, but by that time, I'm absolutely sloshed, because I remember being like,
And then I knew... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, please, because I don't remember seeing you at the VU before.
Yeah, I was on that show.
Okay.
But I just know that you had come to the Cellar and, or maybe I was on the Cellar, who knows? But anyway,
I think you were at the VU too. I'm kind of remembering.
No, because I know I saw you at the VU, because I have a vague recollection of saying to somebody, she was in much better shape earlier. So anyway, but I also know that when you
came in... Which is a very nice way of saying they look fucked. Hey, earlier, before what was happening right now, they looked better.
But I had my, like, my sober alcoholic slash codependent, sure, like, worried mom vibe on me. Because you had come into the Olive Tree you'd come into the Olive Tree, and I had seen that you were quite drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And... why I was at the bottom of the stairs before you were supposed to be on, I don't know.
I don't know.
Was there.
Thank God. So I what remember
do you,
that.
Yeah, so I obviously you're drunk, but you're also flustered, right? You've been running back and forth to shows. So then suddenly Val was probably like, Emma, you know, he got the light.
Yeah. So I remember coming into the Olive Tree. I think I remember seeing Ryan Reese. I think I remember seeing you. I kind of remember slur talking, being like something.
Yeah, you were slurry. I remember that.
Slurry, being like, I hate my life, like, blah, blah, blah. So the other thing, too, is like Vyvanse lowers your alcohol tolerance. So I think I had drank the night before. No, I hadn't. Whatever it was, I just remember being so sloshed so fast. Because I remember drinking, emptying the cup, and then it's real hazy. Something, I hate my life, like, da, da, da. And then I, okay, Emma, it's time to go on the cellar. You go down the stairs. I'm at the top of the stairs and I turn and I look towards the door.
Yes, you turn back. That's my memory.
I turn back and I just flip down the entire staircase.
Like literally like a full, like full 360 over your head all the way to the bottom.
Yeah, I remember that. And I remember splatting down, and then I remember popping my head up going, I'm fine.
I'm fine. I have a distinct memory of you being like, I'm fine. And both me and Val afterwards were joking, being like, it's kind of good that she was so fucking sloshed, that she was so relaxed when she was falling.
So relaxed. I would have broken my ankle or something. I mean, I just...
It was such a bad fall.
It was like, such a bad fall.
I remember...
I was bruised for like maybe a month.
I remember standing there like before you were like, I'm fine. Like I literally like thought you broke your neck.
Sure.
Like, it was such a bad fall.
Thank God I didn't.
I know. It was such a bad fall.
It was so... I mean, we were laughing. Flip over?
You absolutely flipped over like a full flip. And you fell backwards from the start. I distinctly remember watching you turn and then you just went and I, you know, like it's slow. There's nothing you can do. You're fucking powerless.
Right. And I mean, the athleticism alone is like,
I'm fine.
And
not to mention whatever about the lack of professionalism for getting absolutely ripped before the show.
Sure.
What about the professionalism? I'm fine.
I said, I'm fine. And then Val said, do you want to go on stage? And somehow I was like, absolutely. And I just like charged in. And went on stage, probably to her being like, you don't have to don't do this. And I remember being on stage, and this is the only time I've ever, I was too drunk. I remember slurring my words, and I remember being like, the only other time I was that fucked up where I could feel myself slur my words and I was on stage was once at, I didn't get as fucked, I got that fucked up after the show, but it was also a time where I'd taken my Vyvanse late in the day, drinking, and I just remember, I remember talking to someone and being like, hearing the words come out way after I thought I said them, just like, yeah. And then being like, what? So I remember doing that. I got lit early, I think.
Well, we were having a discussion.
Thank you for lighting me. I should not have gone on stage. But I guess
I wasn't hosting, but I Val and I were discussing it.
Thank God, we were Val.
Literally in like crisis management mode because like...
You guys were great.
You know what's terrible?
Mm.
We're so into... being at the cellar,
mm-hmm.
that my main concern for you, knowing that you've had problems with booze and now you're on a slip,
sure,
was them not finding out, like beyond
totally
beyond the group, and just not having this bad night for you,
totally
fuck it up for you, because because it's so bad. But then at the same time, it's like you immediately go into that enabling role.
Exactly. I get that too, because I felt that I totally like, and that's like a trick that's really really tricky. I remember, and you guys like got me out of there.
Yeah, and we covered. I don't think the boss.
I don't think so either.
We didn't mention her name.
Nope.
They don't know.
I don't think. And you guys got me out of there, and also somehow covered for the sound of the splat, because I remember some people being like, "What was that noise?" or something, and I was like, and I don't know what you guys said it
well,
was.
I don't know. I must have been the host or
and
whatever.
Then I got a car, and I remember like getting in the car, and then I was sick that whole night, and I ended up doing morning radio on the Taylor Striker show the next morning, and I was still fucking drunk doing it. And I remember being drunk, and then afterwards the producer was like, "Great episode." And I was like, I'm so hammered right now. And then after that, I would say that is the worst thing that's ever happened to me physically, career-wise. That would be, I did drink again on and off after that and then did stop, you know, day at a time style. But that was the worst. I've never had a physical, like, I mean, that was the worst, I would say.
Yeah,
hands down.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad. And it could have been so bad. And also, just the club that it happened at, and also, I mean, that it could have been such, to get kicked out of the cellar would have been, and I'd have nothing to say for myself other than, absolutely, you're right, I understand.
I know, because I couldn't work.
Because I couldn't work. Yeah, I didn't do my job. In a way, you know, like it was a liability. Thank you so much for helping me not.
It's just so funny because our worlds have collided. I mean, I think I actually follow you on Instagram because of that night, because I think I went to search for you on Instagram to check, like, were you okay?
Also,
but it's just so funny that the next morning you're doing the Taylor Strucker show, and now I know her, but back then I didn't know her.
Also, thank God you didn't go, oh, fuck, or something like that when I fell down the stairs. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I was literally just trying to catch you.
Right.
But I didn't have time.
Appreciate that. But I remember you helping me get up. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Because I remember like swatting at you and being like, I'm fine. And you were kind of like.
Well, one thing about living in Ireland, as long as I have, is you're pretty good at drunkenness doesn't like throw you. You know? Like we're good.
Yeah, you were good. Good. Handled that. Cool, calm, collected.
But isn't it, it just shows like on a serious note, right? Because people sometimes, they can be very blasé about like a slip. And sure. I'm not coming at this from like an AA point of view, because actually on this podcast particularly, we've really broadened out our views on like what's healthy in terms of substance, alcohol abuse, and how you deal with it, right?
Totally.
So I'm not judging.
Such an individual thing.
Exactly.
I'm so with that too. Like some people can smoke pot and be sober, and some people can do whatever.
Yeah, it's like I'm judgmentless now.
Whatever you need to do what you need to do, you do you.
But one thing I am judgmental of.
Let's hear it. Oh, I'm judgmental of a bunch of shit. I'm petty as a motherfucker. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Sometimes people can be a bit too dismissive of the seriousness in that. This is a perfect example of, and like I would, I'll never drink one day at a time. But one of the reasons why, and this doesn't work as a solo thing, but one of the reasons why is I know that I could have that one slip and do a thing that would destroy my life forever. And it could have been that for you that night. Now, of course, it wasn't. And in the end, actually, very minimal damage.
But could,
like,
have.
Could have broke your neck, or you could have lost the cellar.
Yeah.
And had you lost the cellar, God knows what kind of spiral you would have been in then. You know?
Totally.
And I'm not catastrophizing, but that's the thing about booze is so fucking dangerous sometimes.
It's the literally falling down the stairs, I breaking my neck. I mean, fuck. Or getting kicked out of the cellar. That would have such ripple of consequences. Like I'm just so grateful that it was okay. But I mean, it was so embarrassing and such a mess. And yeah, that like one that literally just seeing the door turning back to you guys and then flip falling. You know, that was like it wasn't just a slip of a foot because obviously a bunch of stuff went into creating that moment, but. Imagine breaking your fucking neck.
Oh, yeah.
I'd shoot myself.
Or even just, I mean, my 45 now, but whatever I was at the time, I still probably would have been like, oh, I have a stiff neck now, you know, because anybody can fall down the stairs.
Totally.
And how are you now with the booze?
Not drinking, and I definitely feel, you know, it's like each time I went back out, like that time that I drank, that probably lasted like 4 days. Everything got shorter and shorter leading up to not. Like then, there's probably been like maybe 5 times I've drank since then, but each time, nothing that theatrical. Each time, maybe actually less, maybe I think 4 times, but each time it'll be short. It'll be some, because it just doesn't work anymore. So it'll be something I don't want to deal with or something. I get overwhelmed with life and I'll drink. Actually, it's been 3 times, but then it'll last. It'll be like 2 days, 3 days, and it'll just be awful. And then I'll kind of reassess and like get back in, and I'll get back more into being healthy than I had been before.
And how good are you? Because I find like things have changed so much since like my early days of sobriety in terms of like even in terms of what I understand about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody talked about anxiety in early recovery for me. People didn't really talk about depression. In fact, people that medicated for their depression kind of got shamed. You know, like there was just a lack of understanding of how much more complicated this is than just you don't drink and life gets better, right?
So much more complicated.
Yeah. And it's funny because now I'm just so much more aware of different things that are going on in my body that I had absolutely no labels for back in the day, other than like that's your disease, or, you know, that's your disease and you need to hand that over or whatever, which, you know, it does work early on, but long term, I think you need to know more. But anyway, what I'm asking is, What other stuff are you using other than just the day at a time stuff?
Cocaine. No,
what life techniques?
Well, okay. I started seeing a therapist about 2 years ago, and I'd seen one before, but I feel like in this past year, it's really been kicking into helping because therapy is like a slow build, where it's like something will happen and I'll like react calmer. It's been helping in relationships, and then I've been trying to learn about like other compulsive behaviors. Especially with ADHD. Like I was like, what's me? What's ADHD? I'm 35. I never even Googled what ADHD is until Corona.
Though you're taking medication for it.
I went to a special school for kids with learning disabilities. Never Googled what those fucking disabilities were. If that's not the most learning disabled
thing. That's not the most ADHD.
Yeah, like, never. I'm at a school for it. not once ever being like, but what is it? I was just like, oh, okay, take this, do this. Like, where do frogs come from? Like, just all over the place.
So what is your immediate understanding now from that Google?
Now it's about... Now it's about...
You need to Google again?
Yeah, right.
No. I mean, just your takeaway from that time. It's okay if it's faded.
The big takeaway was from learning about ADHD stuff was about how, like, wanting, like, immediate gratification and compulsive behavior as it, like... Oh, and also hyper-focus. I didn't know about that. Because I will get hyper...
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I was like, I'll get really hyper-focused on stuff. So I was like, do I have ADHD? Because... I will focus. And then they're like, oh no, that's part of it. You get hyper-focused with no concept of time and you can't like disengage. So since I've been learning about that, it helps me disengage. Because I'll be doing something, start doing something else, get hyper-focused on it. And then I'll be like, disengage, disengage, disengage. That helps.
How long does it take to realize you're in hyper-focusness?
It sucks, man. You know why it sucks? It's because hyper-focus mode, I see why people who are bipolar and when they get manic, then they don't want to take their pills because it's like feels good. It takes a minute because, like, all of a sudden I'll be doing something and I'll be like, ooh, how long have I been doing this? And so one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put clocks in every single, like, I just need to have, like, clocks everywhere because otherwise my concept of time gets all fucked up.
So having ADHD is like living in Vegas.
It's like living in Vegas. Oh, my God. I was in Vegas March right before the shutdown. That's where I was, in Vegas at the Cellar in Vegas.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't wait to get back to that because a lot of guys don't like, I love it.
I love it. I do too.
I've got friends there. That's why.
I like the dry heat. I like how Vegas isn't trying to be anything that it's not.
Yeah.
It's just a corny shit fest and I dig that.
So does the therapist help you with ADHD too?
Not really. I mean, the other day I had like the best day of my entertainment career ever. I felt so good. I think this was on, was it Wednesday? It was Monday. I felt so good. I was playing a part in this show called The Good Fight, which is a spinoff from The Good Wife. I was like, oh man, I feel that acting class kicked in. I just feel so good. And I was and then I had a spot at the Cellar and I walked back with Todd Barry and we got cat food. He lives right near me. Just a great day, great night. I'm like, And then...
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And then I realized I didn't have my key. I was locked out of my apartment. I stepped in human shit and I couldn't get into my, I was locked out. So I had to stay at a hotel.
With human poo on your foot.
With human poop on me and no ID. So I couldn't stay at the hotel. I had to like beg them to let me stay at the hotel. Finally being like, Google me. If you Google me, Emma Willman will pop up. The last thing I had done was a reality show about moose poop that didn't do well. So they're like, Emma Willman from Turdy Works. And I was like, yeah,
this is a running theme of the day.
Yeah. And I smelled like human poop. There's a human pooper around here. I knew I had said,
I mean, it almost sounds scripted.
It almost sounds scripted. It was so bad though.
It's like literally like a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
It was very similar to that. Cause I was just like, wow, this was like, I'm so grateful. Like what a great, wow. And then all that happened. And so I missed therapy the next morning. And she was like, why was you got locked out? And I was like, here's the thing. I leave my apartment open and there was a person had to come in to fix something. So I told him to leave it open and he locked it. And she was like, why do you leave your apartment open? I was like, I always leave it open because I'm from Maine. It's never been a problem. And then my therapist was like, you know what? You need to go on new ADD meds. So she.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because she was like, you're locking yourself out of your apartment. Like you're. something's not. And I told her about the human shit and I had trekked it everywhere. So she, from that, she was like, you need to go on meds. But I love not locking my door.
But just if it makes you feel better, I don't lock my door. If it makes you...
What's your excuse?
Well, I was just going to say, it probably won't make you feel better, but like, there's no way I'm a fucking very structured human being.
Yeah. So
I don't know if it makes you feel better, but I don't lock my door.
I never lock it. I like leaving it open. In Maine, honestly,
because
we didn't...
The way I feel about it is like, in a building like this or anywhere...
Virtual doorman. I got a virtual doorman. They can't, how they get in the door?
Yeah. And also, like, what are they going to take? Yeah, like, nobody robs TVs anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you can get a good TV on eBay for $50. Nobody's 100%. Robbing TVs. You know, you got a couple of cute bits of podcasting equipment. You know, you'd eat that.
They can fucking take that. Someone can take that. I haven't used that.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you take that on the chin if they happen to get into your apartment.
No problem. The one thing I have noticed that's missing, and I'm wondering if someone took it now, can't find my license, passport, or one of my suitcases that I did have sitting kind of near the door. And I'm only, it's probably somewhere in the apartment, but now I'm paranoid someone did take that.
Right. Well, I mean, you're a fucking hot mess.
I'd love to blame it on someone just nabbing it. But so from that, my therapist was like, you got to go on some different ADD pills. But I try to not rock the boat with the medication mix.
Yeah. Yeah. And you want to, yeah, you don't want to overly rely on anything, but you definitely feel that. Just in general, your mental health is more settled in that more wild time, right?
Oh, it feels so much more. It's more settled too. Also, just like learning about myself and then trying to really create like boundaries with like being like, okay, what do I need to do to feel more centered in terms of getting steps in every day, drinking water, making sure I sleep not too much, not too little, nutrition. That helps. Like I've been doing meal prep and that's like really calming for me.
Oh, right. Yeah. A lot of people get into that.
It's weird. I don't know why, because I didn't ever like cooking before. Now I kind of... It's relaxing.
Yeah. I mean, what I find, and I've definitely said this on the podcast before, is back in the early days when I was in AA, NA, we felt like we were the only ones that really talked about like looking after ourselves.
Yes. Emotionally. Now everyone is talking
now
about
everybody it. Does, which yeah. I find quite healthy.
Absolutely.
Like 50% of the fucking comedy podcasts are people talking about how they deal with their mental health,
mm-hmm.
which I think is good.
Absolutely. 100%. Especially, I find like with this, it's like, you get to a breaking point when you do something that is so like poking at your mental health that, and I mean that because it's like the schedule, the rejection or perceived rejection, all that stuff, the highs, the lows, whatever, if you let that get to you, which is very human to do, that's going to start, if you're not on solid ground, it's going to start to like rock you. So it's either like you break or you start getting better, I find, or that's what I found.
Yeah, do you want to know what's funny?
Please.
About the stress of our job.
Yeah.
I identify with you 100%. I don't talk about it that much because I feel like, you know, I feel like it's a weird thing to complain about.
I know, I agree too. I agree too, it is.
But, here's the crazy thing. Do you know what I find more stressful than dealing with my job?
What?
Watching somebody else deal with it. Like being with Hannah, and I'm not going to give away any of her life because this is not about her, but just our job is stressful. We admit that. Watching her deal with the stresses of our job, I actually find that more stressful than when I deal with it myself.
That's so interesting. I wonder if it's just because it's also someone you love too. Like this is totally different, but this is going to seem like a real jump, but I'm going to loop it around. Did you watch the Michael Jackson documentary?
I actually didn't watch it. I didn't watch it.
So I was watching it with my girlfriend at the time who was a therapist, and she was like, and in it, the guys realize they had been molested when they have kids and they start thinking, oh, if someone did this to my kid, oh my God, it's not okay. So she was like, people a lot of times will realize how hard or traumatizing something is when they see it, someone else, they love dealing with it. So this is very different from that.
No, I know, but it's...
But...
I literally feel like online hate in my gut. With her, I don't see it, but like if I see her get upset, and yet I, especially these days, I can brush off the worst shit that's right. being written about me. I couldn't give a shit.
Right.
But it kills me when I see her dealing with it.
Because you're in love. That's part of what love is, I think. I think that makes so much sense because also you're feeling like more protective. And then it's also like, hey, you don't know her. Like I know her and you really don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. With ourselves, we're like, all right.
But yeah. I don't even get into that. I just get into hating her being upset.
Yeah.
And the anxiety that comes from it is so intense. It's actually, this is even deeper. It's given me a better understanding of my mother, who is a fucking anxiety-ridden mess.
Hmm.
Bad.
Hmm.
And I didn't have a ton of sympathy for her. I was not that understanding about it because I was on the risk, you know, I was affecting my life in a negative way. But now when I see the minimal stress of dealing with, like, you know, Hannah's life and how it makes me feel, I think, God, my mother must have been freaking out 24/7 about us. Her children.
Totally.
She must have been, like, dying inside every day with the anxiety.
And then throwing kids into it, that's a whole other level.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, because it's, like, fucking for real that you're responsible
for.
But now
I don't want to have kids because I...
You don't want to have kids?
No, I do. I do, but I'm just like, fuck, I'm definitely going to turn into my mom and worry too much.
That's a reason
And that worry is going to project onto them in a way that they don't see as love.
Right.
They're going to see it as... interference.
Totally, I get that. I see what
I'm catastrophizing.
I get that too. Do you think you guys want to have kids?
I mean, I would assume so. But
that'd be awesome.
Like, we're not, you know.
That'd be so fun. I want everyone I know to have kids.
I know Rachel Feinstein showed up with a kid the other day.
She did. It's like literally the most magical, amazing thing you can do. Kind of. I think. I mean, I think you guys would be great parents. Not to put the pressure on. You'd be great.
Well, it's funny that you should mention that because. I wrote a thing that it hasn't gone anywhere yet. But we're on a bit of a hiatus from dealing with it. But it was actually a lesbian sperm donation drama.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
I won't give you all the details, but I will tell you, and you didn't know this, that I had you as a character.
Oh, really? Thanks. I appreciate it.
Just like, you know.
Yeah, sure.
It was a proposal. But
sure.
There was an Emma Willman character.
Great. Awesome. Cool. Doing backflips down the stairs.
It's just so funny you're talking about kids. I was like, oh, that's funny because I had you having kids.
Yeah. Was I carrying the baby?
No. I actually had you in this, like, this crew of people. But I won't give any more details away because it's a fucking rock solid idea. So I'm just going to steal it. I'm not worried about you stealing it because if it had gone anywhere, I was going to actually say, like, do you want to be involved in the writing? But this is all, like, pie in the sky shit. But anyway.
But I think you guys would be great parents.
And I'm sure
you'd be so fun. You'd be a fun dad, and you want to have your parent. Like, my dad's very anxious, but he's definitely very anxious. Like, he was all very, very anxious, I would say, in terms of, like, just being protective. But I felt it in a way of, like, he's, like, protective, maybe very protective. But I would say he babied me a little bit, but he's very protective.
Yeah, and that's the dad to daughter thing, which, you know, I only had brothers. So I never got to witness that.
Right.
I mean, my dad was a doting father, but I do feel if we had a sister, like, he would have been...
I don't think he was as protective as my brother. Also, I'm, like, an idiot, so I think he really had to, like, lay it on thick, you know what I mean? Like, he was double timing with me. Like, he'd be like, she didn't mean to do that, she did this and that, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, and it's always the case, I feel, if the perception is that somebody needs more...
Oh, yeah. That... He's clocking in. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So, but just a last thing on that. Do you ever think about having kids?
So interesting. I have gone through phases with it because I remember when my sister first had my niece, I went and I was babysitting my niece and I was babysitting her. It almost kind of caused the end of a relationship. I was babysitting her with someone I was with at the time. We had this, like, magical day in Boston. It was so incredible. And I remember us just kind of looking at each other and it was kind of like, oh my God, do we want to have a kid? And then I was like, my sister just moved into this beautiful house in Brookline, Massachusetts. We watched my niece, for 5 hours. My sister had prepared all the food for us. We just had to take her to the park and put her to sleep. This is not what it's like having a kid. We also didn't structure our lives. So we live in this, like, gorgeous suburb in Brookline where my mom also lives next door. And, like, you know, they go to, like, Cape Cod on the weekends. It's like, this wouldn't be... If I'm still doing entertainment stuff, how would we, it wouldn't look like that. Like, this isn't the way we've set stuff up.
But you got Broody.
Yeah. And she, I think, kind of wanted to, then she started talking about, like, getting a sperm, like, her eggs frozen and, like, but I remember for a real clear moment being like, wow, I could picture it and then I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, and it's like
it's
getting easier and easier to make that decision.
It is, and I think if I was with the right person too, we could figure it out. But I wouldn't say it's a priority. But it's definitely. I mean, I think it's, like, the most amazing, incredible thing. But then, I mean, you got to put the kid, and they're so expensive too.
That's it. You're living in New York,
right?
Yeah, I was just curious you brought it up, and then I was thinking about, you know, because I was writing it with another woman, and we thought about it a lot.
Sure.
But you know, she has two kids with her partner, and she's done it. So she was coming from the experience side, and I guess I was coming from the, the humor was coming from the complications that arise from when when all the relationships break down. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Was the drama. But anyway, the last thing I want to talk about is, of course, I did a bit of research, do a little Googling. I found an article from 2017. Do you have a cat?
No, it's a door.
Oh, it's a door.
Yeah.
Your door open?
Not my door. Yeah. And I locked the door. It's the one across the hall.
So 2017. And you were kind of complaining. Complaining.
Right word, I'm sure.
No, because it wasn't a complaint. It was a frustration of yours that you felt like you couldn't talk about your relationships in a way that wasn't like, I'm in a gay relationship. Like when you're talking about on stage, you know? And that somehow you were hoping for a time where you could just talk about relationships where it wasn't like it had to be jokes about it being like a lesbian relationship or a same-sex relationship. So my first question before we get into that a little bit more, if you want.
Sure.
Has it improved? Because that was 2017.
Part of me wants to be like, you know, I feel like you can, maybe I just wasn't doing it in the right way. I think I should have been more trusting of the general public than I was being. Like, I think part of me was like, oh, if I talk about going to the grocery store with my girlfriend, then they'll be like, hey, it's a gay grocery store. It's a gay grocery store story. But really, if I really am just emphasizing something at the grocery store, I really don't think people would do that takeaway, but I was scared of it. So I think I was kind of projecting onto people. There's been very few times where I've felt like, ooh, people are kind of looking at me funny, and that could be any number of things. So I think that was more my like internalized like fear and issues, I would say.
And do you also think too that you really just didn't want to be seen as like a gay comic?
Maybe that too, or again, getting nervous of being like, because also like, If I did it, hey, when lesbians go to the grocery store, this happens, and then bisexuals go, and this happens, and straight people go, this happens, then, yeah, it is a gay joke. Love to hear that joke, actually.
I was just going to say, it's a totally valid thing to joke about.
No. Totally. I'd be kind of interested in hearing about, I don't know what the difference is. I don't think the differences would, I don't know what.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate sometimes that you have to question, you know, like, I just think, like, whatever's funny is funny.
Right.
But at the same time, I really, and it's just a sympathy. I don't know how it feels, but.
I appreciate that.
No, but I appreciate the dilemma that the added complication that you're dealing with, which is, you know, how do I want to be perceived? And, you know.
Yes. And I feel it now. I still really feel it with I just trying to figure out a way to address how I look. Because even now, I think I've evolved thinking about, oh, if I talk about something, it doesn't mean it's a gay something. And like, I just have to do it in the right way. But I have to have some joke that addresses how I look in some way, or there can be like a tightness, like, I swear there'll be like something, and then I'll make fun of how I look, and then I'll be like, ah. But so that I always like go back and forth with, like being like, how do I like quickly address it so I can then move on?
But do you think it's really a thing, or it's in your head?
I don't know.
Because I don't think it's a thing.
You don't think so?
Well, I never think it. I have never watched you once, and I point out to people sometimes I'm not like one of these annoying guys that hits you up with tags when you have an ass, but like if I see something and I feel like, It would be good if they addressed it or something.
Sure.
I would say it. But I have never once looked at you getting on stage and said, she needs to address the fact that she has a bit more of a masculine haircut.
I have a question, actually, because you don't look like the average comedian. Because you're good looking. You're like way, like you're like a good looking person. No offense to the average comedian at all. But like, did you ever feel like you needed to like address that you're like?
I've never addressed that.
Interesting. There's good for you.
There's a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
Number one.
It's not likable. It's a tough one to address. You'd have to really do it in a certain way.
Well, number one, I was not aware. And by the way, this comes from a place of being told that I'm good looking, not me wanting to tell people.
I'm bringing it up. He's not saying.
I was not aware for a long time in my career that people were seeing me as like a good looking comic.
Really?
Yeah, I was in Ireland anyway.
So is everyone, are you like a common look in Ireland? Because you're very handsome.
Well, there's a few things going on. Number one. I was not aware of it, so it wasn't like something I felt like I needed to address.
Right.
And then I was well into my career before I realized that like people find me to be a better looking comic.
Mm-hmm.
Number two,
in person, not just for comics. Like you're good looking even for like the general population too.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
From a good-looking person to another good-looking person.
Thank you. Cheers. Everyone's like, fuck you guys.
Great bone structure.
We got a bunch of problems. So just know it all equals out. And I had awful acne for years. But it,
and so did I.
Boom, boom, boom. We worked for it.
We fucking worked out. So, no, but the one thing I will say, though, is it's more of an issue here. People bring up my appearance in New York, especially, a lot more. So much so that somebody messaged me the other day and said that Mark Norman talked about, you know, my dress sense on a podcast, which doesn't bother me at all.
Sure.
But I had told Hannah before, I said, it's a weird phenomenon. The New York comics, they bring up my appearance a lot. And I wasn't used to that in my life.
Interesting.
You know, and then somebody messaged me and says, oh, Mark Norman was talking about how you dress on a podcast.
Didn't used to bring that up at all?
Honestly, no. But
wow.
Needless to say, I have never felt like... sometimes on an improv, I might make a joke. Like, actually, very recently, I started making jokes because, you know, this whole, like, white, you know, a single white, straight white male, you know, like, you know, we're like the top of the pecking order and everyone, you know, supposedly we're having a hard time, whatever. So my joke is like, you know, I'm not just a straight white male. I'm good looking. You know, I really haven't suffered.
Right, exactly.
and people laugh at that.
Absolutely, 100%.
But that was like an improv.
Right.
And it'll come up in a situation where I'm being a bit cheeky.
Exactly.
Like
exactly.
If I'm messing around with the drummer in the VU or something, and we're playing with race a little bit.
Right.
You know, I'll throw that in as like a joke. But
I think it's an important thing to say because it actually does kind of make a difference. Because being like a good looking person, then it's like really, I mean, you've heard people talk about like, so, you know, if someone approaches you and they're not attractive. I've seen women say like a guy could approach you if she's not attractive and then it's like get the fuck out of here. But like if a hot guy comes up and says something, then it's like, oh, interesting. You know what I mean? Like there is definitely a lot of like,
yeah, and that's a deeper issues about
sure.
But what I will say is I've never thought that about you. However, because you have, I guess, a unique appearance, you know, it's really not that unique, actually. You look good. You have a good style.
I appreciate that.
But like it's enough. There's enough going on for you to make a joke if you want it.
See, I don't think
it's necessary.
Really? Maybe I'll try not to. Maybe I should just let it go.
I'm showing my age, but the one thing I always think, particularly the way you look now, is that you really look a lot like Sick Boy from Trainspotting.
Really? We got to see
that.
Very
good looking.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. But see, I feel like then for some people, then they need some kind of explanation of that. They're like, what's going on? Because you're also like a hip person, open-minded. Like someone else might be like, literally be like, what is it?
Well, what's your concern? Let's do a writing workshop.
Please, I'm desperate. I need new material. I'm going to shoot myself.
What do you think you are in terms of how you present?
Well, this is where it gets tricky. I think I'm like a cute, androgynous looking person.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I think.
And what do you want people to see? I know it doesn't matter, but we're just writing here. We're not. I'm not trying to get to the depth of who you are. But what do you want people to see?
My fear, I think, is that people will see me and think that I'm gonna like lecture them, which is the opposite of what I would do. Like they'd see me and be like, "Oh, she's gonna force me to drink almond milk, and I just want to drink cow milk." Like I think they would think that I'll.
Well,
be
have
like,
you done that?
No.
Well,
no.
I mean, like I don't know. That's definitely our first take.
Yeah, I think
so. Our first take is, how am I presenting to you?
Yes.
And then you make jokes about how you're presenting. Now, I also took from that interview in 2017 that you feel bad when you feel that the crowd are laughing at sexuality jokes in a way that...
Well, because what I would do is I would make fun of like gayer looking, quote unquote, like butcher people than me to like kind of like endear myself. And then I started feeling bad about that because it was like they'd be laughing at it and I'd be like, ooh. And that would make me feel kind of bad. I'll still do it, but I have to know that it's like a fun crowd where we're all like if it's like there's gay people in the crowd, then of course I'll do it. But I think
a premise of how I present, for example, like
I need to do that.
For example, Monday Pundy, what's his name?
Matthew Broussard. Good looking guy. Another good looking guy.
But he addresses it.
What does he say about him?
Well, his joke is literally a very similar premise, which is, I'm aware of how I present. And
yes.
He kind of comes like, he presents like a white entire, I can't remember what the joke was, but it's pretty funny.
And Chris DiStefano used to open with that because Chris DiStefano used to always, he used to open, this is like years and years and years and years ago. He would talk about I got a douchebag haircut. He would talk about that. I remember that.
Yeah, so, and honestly, it's pretty common for comedians to make a joke about how they present.
Absolutely.
Up top, except that you got a lot more going on, especially because it's so current.
Right.
In the sense that how you present, sexuality, how you identify yourself
right.
is, is, is a big topic.
I think I also want to show, like, I'm silly, I'm not judging anybody, and I'm problematic too, because then sometimes when I see people go out and like do like luxury-ish stuff, like, it's like I'm like, ooh, that's just so the opposite of what I would even ever want to hear. So I want
to know,
like,
but it's very difficult to write when you're constantly writing about when you're constantly worried about what you don't want it to be.
True.
It's much better to write and then you can decide afterwards.
That is such a true, good statement and very important observation. You're
especially
right.
Because, like, you're
right.
A lesbian woman who's come through a male dominated fucking industry,
sure,
at a time where society is changing at a rapid tick. If you're not allowed to have your goddamn opinion on how you're presenting with all this, then I don't know who has,
preach,
who has
sister,
who has,
yeah,
a right.
It's true.
You know what I mean? So
that's
like,
true.
You joking about your literal paranoia about how you present, is you have a right to make that joke.
I used to always, before I go on stage, I go, does this look too gay? And I'd be asking it seriously. I didn't do it the other, when I had a show like 3 weeks ago in Hawaii, and I was at, my friend Justin was with me, and I was like, I changed it from saying, does this look too gay? Actually, I kind of coded it. Now I'd be like, Justin, does this look friendly? Does this look friendly? And he'd be like, yeah, the blue's friendlier than the black. And then, but he'll do it too. He's like, does this look friendly? But it's probably because he's been with me a bunch being like, is this friendly? Is this friendly? Does this look friendly? But that's my way of almost being like, is this, I want to look like approachable, which is like code for like a little softer, like not too much, which, you know, fuck if it looks too much. Like, what does that mean? Just look,
well, listen,
how I want to look.
The funny thing about, we talking about my appearance, the funny thing about, my friend asked me to be godfather to his child.
Congratulations.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
And it was my fifth godchild.
Wow.
I didn't want to do it. And I told him, I said, listen, I have four godchildren. This is going to be my fifth.
That's
said,
a lot.
You're my best friend.
Yeah.
And if it means, if it's very important for you to meet, for me to be the godfather, I will absolutely do it.
Sure.
But I also want to let you know that I have four and I'm totally fine with you asking somebody else.
Yes.
Just in the sense of like, I'm spread pretty thin. But he was like, I want you to be the godfather. And I was his sponsor for confirmation. It's a long story.
Yeah.
He got confirmed way later. And that was I was very happy to be Caden's godfather.
Sure. Great name.
The day of his baptism, I got dressed up for the baptism, but I had to rush into the city for a spot.
Mm.
So I showed up at the cellar, like, quite dressed up.
Mm.
And everybody made a lot of comments. And I liked the way it felt on stage, because I get dressed up in Ireland for my big shows, but I would never get dressed up for like a spot.
Oh, interesting.
And I actually just liked looking good on stage. My motivation was literally, you know what? I like the point of difference.
And that's huge. Also, I was going to say, it really does break up the show.
It's a point of difference.
It's a point of difference, which is so important.
As are you.
Right.
No, I don't use it for jokes. I literally use it for my fucking fragile ego.
You feel better. And that's huge. That's huge. Whatever makes you feel better in a way to present a situation, so then you feel like more motivated to do what you're doing.
But it's such an easy joke to make. Like, I know I look like this. You
right.
know? Like, I'm not going to tell you, you know, you, there's whatever. I'm not going to tell you this. I'm not going to tell you
right.
that. And then you can also decide, like, you know, because trans issues are very complicated, and you'll probably be better to avoid that.
Right.
But obviously, there's also that, right?
Well, I've been trying to write about that, actually. I was trying to write about how I had this friend who's much more feminine than me come out to me as female to male. And while they were doing that, I was, like, making it all about myself, because I was like, well, what are you trying to say about me? Even though they weren't, obviously. But I did think there was something funny there about someone. But I know that that's a real delicate one, where I'd have to do that. Also, so many people are asking me how I identify now, that I'm like, well, now I have no fucking, I have no idea. And the other day I auditioned to be a curvy Latina. Just a role where it was like clearly written for a curvy Latina woman. And I was like, well, now I got no fucking like what's up or down. So I do think there are like funny things I would like to explore with that. I just haven't really let myself.
Yeah.
Go
and
there.
I think I think you should. And I think you should just do it in a way that's very honest to you, because then it's not offensive. Right.
Everyone's asking everybody how they identify now. It's stressful.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're very like, okay, I'm just going to give a hypothetical.
Please.
This is not a judgment. Mm-hmm. This is a hypothetical. I have no idea if this is who you are, but I'm gonna pretend I know. Mm. If you're very confident in that you're a lesbian woman,
I always say I'm gay, because like sexually, I always like to role play that I'm a guy, so I actually don't connect well with lesbians sexually.
Oh.
Yeah, I like a. I
well,
like
now
a
that's bi- fucking interesting.
I like. I need
no
to,
stop right there. We
it needs
got
to be a bisexual.
We got comedy there, because if you say you identify as a male sexually,
yeah.
that's fucking funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a strict thing. No more lesbians for me, because I didn't, all the best sex for me was always with, and then if I would be with lesbians, they'd be like, I think you're a trans guy, because that's very important to me, and I like when the girls use male pronouns in bed, and I don't like any feminizing stuff like that, and I don't, so, and then lesbians, I haven't had a shit fuck bunch of fun with a lesbian, maybe for a little bit, but the sexual dynamicism.
So who are you going for?
I would say bisexuals and queers. Yeah, high femme, no hint of masculinity.
And what's queer in relation to this versus?
I would say someone who's bisexual but also just uses queer. It's like kind of the same thing.
Right, okay.
This or that. Someone that indicates in some way they like getting pounded out. That's what I want. You know what I mean? And if they say they're bisexual, to me that's a cue to that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
That I like that. And no hint of man one. No sneaky man ones. Now there's this whole thing where it's like they'll look feminine, but then you start talking to them and they'll be like, and I've got friends like this, but they'll be like, oh yeah, what's up? And I did this and that. And I call that a sneaky man one. I know that's problematic.
No, but I know, but the thing is that it's so fucking fascinating.
Yeah. See, that's so interesting to me, because to me that's just so odd. It's such a thing.
Well, it's so normal for you, right? And like, see, my problem is I'm always curious about everything, so I always want to know.
That's a good
thing. Yeah, but I'm not a good gauge of, I'm not a good gauge, but one thing I am 100% sure of, and I think this comes much more from the other side of the Atlantic comedy scene, because you do Edinburgh and you do all these shows that where you're geared towards narratives.
Mm.
People are more inclined to explore those more difficult subjects. And to me, how you're not exploring everything that you just talked about is beyond me, because it's fucking fascinating. And honestly, it's very easy to make jokes, and it's trial and error, right? It's trial and error. Sometimes you'll probably make a joke that some people might say is offensive, but you can try them out in places like the cellar where they're not filming. Like, how the fuck is there not comedy in the fact that, like, you sexually feel like a man?
Yes.
And then, like, there has to be a joke about how it's apparently getting more difficult to be a man, and it's like... And my role play is getting more difficult.
Yeah, it's getting more and more complicated. And also, it's tricky being sexually dominant and having ADHD and being like a mess in the rest of my life, because then, like, women want a man or someone who, like, penetrating them, who's not like a mess. So if you can't be like a sexual daddy and then not know where your keys are. You know what I mean?
Although.
You can.
Although.
You find a way.
Although,
thank God.
Although. Jackie Fabulous has the joke that unemployed guys fuck you the best.
Absolutely. That's the job. That is true. We got something to prove.
Anyway, I mean, this was, we pushed it a little with the writing workshop, but
I love a writing workshop.
No, but what I am saying is that it's just, I really encourage you to just
explore
that a little more, because it's so rich.
Yeah.
And it's so not being done. Okay, maybe if you're gigging in the trans scene, or, you know, you're LGBTQ, you got that QT,
I don't think it's too much there, because it's not very common there either. Because I'll be like, hey, is this relatable? And they'll be like, no. So I don't think that's being explored.
Well, I don't know what's being explored anywhere, but like points of difference, as we were talking about before, you're talking about you. I I'm sorry, but if you can't fucking come out and talk about you trying to make sense of it all in a fluid world, in a fluid world where we're getting sick of fucking labels.
True.
You know, and especially if you can have a PC take, even though I don't like the term PC, but what I mean is, like, if you can have an acceptable take on your confusion around pronouns,
yes.
That's not like, so now I gotta call you a fucking day now?
Right.
Fucking grammatically incorrect.
Right.
You know, like, it's not actually a take of not accepting it. It's a take of being confused about who you are.
Sure, exactly. Totally. 100%.
And then you're being brave, quote unquote. And anyone who tries to say you're being disrespectful, it's like,
I'm talking about me.
I'm literally on my own journey.
Right, totally.
Because, like, you're allowed to be you.
Right. Right. You're allowed to be you. And it's like, no offense to myself. Like, I would be the one. I've actually had that with my sister before, and she's super straight. And I remember talking to her about something. I think I used the term the man one, and she was like, I don't think you can say that. She was like, all my friends who are lesbians and the lesbian moms I know, like, you're not allowed to say that. I was like, very true, except for I'm gay, so I can say what I want. I was like, I get the Trump card. And she was like, but this, now Trump is like taking that term, but I was like, I get the final say in that. And she was like, do you? And she was like, I guess. And her husband was like, I think she does. And I was like, because Katie was like, I think that's like really like not okay to say. But then I was like, yeah, you're right. And yet, boom, boom, I get to have the final say in it. And
And plus, you can try and find out.
You can try and find out. True.
I mean, in my opinion, it's not a canceling offense, but
right.
But I think actually, especially when you're trying to work out creativity.
Right. Yes.
It's better to work out without the shackles and
totally.
Then, not shackles, the wrong word, but without the fear. And
it
then
can feel like shackles sometimes.
Pull it back then afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know,
I agree with
It's always easy to pull a performance back or pull something
back. I totally agree with that.
Well, that's exciting.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I've been looking for stuff to, I guess I just wasn't sure if it would be too much of a mind fuck for people to be like, what are you talking about?
No, but you'll find the funny.
Yeah.
Because in every complicated thing you're talking about is a simple premise to throw in there.
True.
And you know that's not cheap. That's
right.
It's not like, oh, you know, she brought that up and then she made some jokes about being a man.
Right.
Fuck
right.
It.
Right.
You
right,
know.
Right.
Like I think actually I was going to say this a second ago. Actually, we're all trying to make sense of this, and some mm-hmm. people are very slow to even be open to mm-hmm. thinking it's okay to have these discussions. So you're really part of that journey of just making it accessible. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be your responsibility, but if you do a good job,
true,
then that's great.
Totally.
You know?
And I'm doing it for me too, so it would
yeah,
be
and
like,
you're a creative person. You're, right. you're trying to explore different avenues. You're trying to be funny. You're trying to come up with funny stuff. Like, it's totally fine to explore that.
Excellent.
That's my opinion. And plus, what's even better about that is, even though I don't think you should ever be worried about being trapped into gay comedy stereotypes, it's actually not that. It's,
right.
It's way more. It's not way more interesting.
Oh,
but
I think so.
It's
yeah.
unique.
Totally. Totally.
It's
that's
novel.
The key. Novel. That's the key. I really think that's the key. You just want it to be something that people haven't heard before. And then the deeper you get into yourself, the more you're able to do that.
And I think if you're confused about it yourself, it's definitely going to be a thing that people haven't heard much because you
true.
Haven't been able to fucking figure it out for yourself.
Yeah. How could they? Yeah. I don't even know. It's changing all the time. That's true.
Well,
that's
good.
True.
All right. Well, what's your what's
Emma
your,
Willman on Instagram, and
it's two L's, two N's.
Two
right?
L's, two N's, and I'm really been focusing on Instagram. Just I like Instagram and Facebook. Haven't fallen in love with TikTok yet.
No, or yeah. Twitter. I'm not dealing with Twitter. It's too much hate.
I know why.
Whatever, the internet's a dark place.
It is a dark place. So much hate on Twitter.
So much. It's a hate place. That's the vibe.
It is. Maybe I'm just going to go in there and start like tweeting. Nah, I was going to say I'll go tweet positive stuff. I'm not fucking doing that. Never mind.
Stay off it.
Yeah, I'm just
you don't need to be
it.
There, you know?
I agree.
Twitter's you too know, much. And Twitter's also like live tweeting and stuff like that, you know? But just people just, they're trying to outdo each other with their negativity.
Right.
We don't need that.
We don't need that. We live in fucking New York City.
We're above that, man.
Right. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dez.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Emma. I hope you enjoyed that. You know, I these days I can't tell if there's any, you know, disparity in enjoyment by the listener between sort of Irish-focused stuff, U.S.-focused stuff, or if that doesn't matter. I start to feel like it doesn't matter as much anymore. That's my personal opinion. But, you know, I'm always open to feedback about that. But I thought Emma was a great guest. I mean, I think all our guests are great. But you know what I think it is actually? Emma was one of the first live interviews I've done in a long time, other than with Hannah. You know, I haven't actually been next to somebody. I think it makes a difference. And I didn't even say that up top because I wasn't even realizing that that's probably part of the reason. But I was sitting with her in her apartment. It made a huge difference, actually. Just realizing that now. So hopefully more of that to come now that I'm fully vaccinated with the full extent of the immunity that the Pfizer vaccine has to offer me, as I'm now, I'm actually, tomorrow will be 4 weeks actually since my, no, yes, tomorrow will be 4 weeks since my second dose. So I am 100% full whack of the Pfizer immunity. So that's great. Next week, I think we're going to have Garrod's Farley. I already recorded it. It'll be two gay comedians in a row. Can we handle that? Can we handle that? I don't even think that's a fair question. I don't think it should be a question, and it's not going to be a question. And it ties into something Emma was saying about that sort of like the gay comic, you know? So anyway, we have Garrod's on next week, which was also a great chat. That was not live. He was in Ireland. But it was nice to chat to Garrod. So that'll be coming up next week. And we talk about the marriage equality referendum and a few other things that are quite different from this chat. And actually, Garrod's was... He was
He took me by surprise with some of his opinions, which I thought was great. And he was really, really fun to chat to. So I think we're on a good roll. You know, I've been, not that I'm never not motivated, but I just feel more on top of it these days. I'm not exactly sure why, but I feel like I have a bit more structure in my life. And I'm definitely in a better mood now that I'm gigging again. I did talk to Emma about being back on stage because she's also back. But I kind of cut it out because I feel like I talked to John Bishop about that. And I also talked to Gary Rhodes about it. And I just kind of, there was just so much other stuff going on with the Emma chat that I thought, you know, I'll take a week off from this and then I'll get back into it with Gary Rhodes. Just because, like, I don't want to, like, bombard you guys with the same conversation. And sometimes I get paranoid that comics talking about comedy stuff sometimes can be a bit tedious, almost like sort of like in-house office shit, water cooler chat from, you know, office politics. So I don't like to overuse that, even though I do love talking about it. And I'm sure that you guys do find it interesting. Sometimes I can overthink, actually, what you guys might want or not want. So I apologize for that, but that's life. But then again, I'm an oversharer, so you end up finding out all my dark thoughts about what I think is good and not good on the podcast. I feel like there's something... Aiden came back. My brother came back. So that's been nice. So Aiden's in the house. So we might get a couple of bonus episodes up with Aiden. Because we were having some chats this morning and he was really... he was making me laugh a lot about some of his ideas about Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris. I'm not going to tell you what they were, but I'm just saying he was making me laugh. It was cynical enough now, I have to be honest. And this is... I'm not going to get into arguments about whether Jordan Peterson is good or bad or Sam Harris is good or bad. But Aiden was making some funny critiques, which was making me laugh. So I have a funny feeling we might get a couple of bonus episodes out of Aiden. And I'll keep you updated on the tour, the Mia Mama tour. Autumn 2021 looking less and less likely because just Ireland's just, there's not a lot of confidence coming from the venues that we're going to be back to full capacity, but we'll see how the summer goes. Well, I guess we're going to have to make a decision probably by June, just in case anybody's waiting, but I will keep you posted. Crazy times in the world. I know it's annoying some people, I guess, because I'm posting on Instagram about doing shows and then they're sitting there with tickets that they've had for over a year. And they're looking for a bit of clarity. So I really apologize about that, but it's just very hard to know. And it's not really just up to me. So I'm waiting to find out what the best thing to do is. Because I just don't want to do that show unless we're back to full capacity, you know? Because it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like a once-in-a-lifetime kind of a show. It's like a special show. And I don't want it to be, you know, I want it to have the run out that it deserves and the atmosphere that it deserves. And, you know, truth be told, some of those bits are hard to do. And I just don't, they would be harder to do in like a 30% filled large room, you know? And that's not to say that I couldn't do it in smaller venue, 30% in smaller venues, like a little more atmosphere, but it's, there's a little bit of technical stuff. Like it needs space between the audience and the screen. It needs a bit of space for the props that I have on stage. So I want it to be optimum conditions because there is a lot of jokes about grief and death and stuff that just you don't want to have anything working against you, you know? Plus, it was going so well. I don't want to kind of bring it back and have it be not as fun as it was, you know? So that's coming up. I never worry about these sort of meandering exits of the podcast because I feel like the podcast is done. You know, if you're hanging around just to listen to me waffle, that's fine. But I don't feel like you're getting any less. This is just like, you know, like a little bonus at the end. Plus, I'm just sitting in the car listening to the rain, and it's relaxing me just sitting here talking to you. So, as always, at Des Bishop on Instagram, patreon.com/Des Bishop. We will see you or talk to you next week. Thank you so much.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.